Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. This is Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. The history of improv is an important part of comedy in America. Without improv, comedy would not be nearly as inventive, nor nearly as funny. While ad-libbing has been around for a while, the art form of improv is a wholly American invention. That's the case author Sam Wasson makes in his book, Improv Nation: How We Made a Great American Art. Sam joined Beta recently to talk about his book about the great film noir Chinatown. When I sprang the idea on him to spontaneously talk about the history of improv, Sam was more than game. So if you're wondering why this conversation has more of a freewheeling, spontaneous kind of flow to it than other Beta conversations, it's because we improvised it. Maybe we should do all our interviews this way. Or maybe not. Anyway, here's Sam Wasson on the history of improv comedy.
Improvisation was invented in this country. People assume improv has been around, since the beginning of time. Ad-libbing has been around. Certainly people have, had scripts and have deviated from the scripts. But the whole notion of, can I get a suggestion from the audience, that was invented by Viola Spolin in Chicago in the early part of the 20th century. And she was a social worker and invented these improvisational games as a way to get children to interact with each other. Children who didn't speak the same language, children who were anxious to interact. And so Viola created these games. And it really was a therapy and a political therapy for children. So it was an invented art form.
Yeah. And my wife, Catherine, I'm going to do my impression of her for you. She's, because when I told her, talked to her about your book, she said, improv wasn't invented in America. It was done in England and France before that.
Not true.
In fact, yes.
It was illegal, actually, in England because...
Yes, that's what I meant to tell her. Yes, and yes. Yeah, it was illegal. They had to run the script by the Lord Chamberlain, right?
You got it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so so you mentioned Viola, kind of the grandmother or the mother of improv, and then her son, Paul Sills, kind of carried the torch in terms of spreading the word about improv. And then we go to Chicago... Right, and Compass, isn't that a key?
This is all in Chicago. Viola starts in Chicago.
Yes.
Her son Paul takes his mother's games for children, and he says, well, what if adults play these games on stage?
Yeah.
And that could be a great way to convey, the news of the day, to create instant theater for people and show people what their lives look like right now. And he cast two University of Chicago students. Well, I should say one of them was not enrolled, but just hanging out. And they were Mike Nichols and Elaine May.
Yes.
So at that point, improv comedy becomes invented accidentally. This was not work that was intended to be funny. That's why I'm stressing the difference between improvisation and improv comedy. Improv comedy starts when Sills casts Mike and Elaine, whose natural pose is just to be funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me about, like, what are your favorite, one of the iconic Mike and Elaine sketches, yes.
There's a sketch called Teenagers, which is basically two teenagers trying to make out on a park bench. There's also the mother sketch, which is the Jewish mother, giving her son a hard time for being out of touch. And he's, of course, a rocket scientist, so he's been a little busy.
You know, Arthur, I'm sure that all the other scientists there have mothers. And I'm sure that they all find time after their breakfast or before their count-off to pick up a phone and call their mother.
Honey, listen, now you have me on the phone.
And you know how I worry.
Well, that's the point.
I read in the paper that you're still losing them.
Mother. Mother, I don't lose them.
I nearly went out of my mind.
Honey, listen, I want...
I thought, what if they're taking it out of his pay?
All right.
Those are two of my favorites, but they are the first improv comedians, to my mind, still the greatest improv comedians.
Why? Why do you think they're the greatest? What was it about their work that was so special?
First of all, they picked material that was risky. And, you know, in today's comedy culture, we're so afraid of offending people. Mike and Elaine, who took on offensive subjects about motherhood and teenage sexuality, they would not be working today if they were in today's comedy culture. So that's one thing. They were unafraid. Two, they were great actors, great writers, and great directors. They didn't know that yet, but they had all those muscles working. And that's what great improv comedians need to be, to improvise. A lot of improv comedians, great ones today, they don't have all those muscles working. They may be great actors, but not necessarily great writers. They don't have three out of the three. Mike and Elaine had three out of the three. And I can even add, as a fourth, the fearlessness to take on taboo subjects.
Yeah. And Mike Nichols and Elaine May, they were together in terms of doing their act together, what, a few years?
They had their, let's see, it was only a handful of years,
yeah.
But it ended in the early 60s. And then, of course, they went off to tremendous careers in film. Mike obviously directs The Graduate and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and Elaine directs, you know, A New Leaf, and I think one of the great film comedies of all time, The Heartbreak Kid. Mm-hmm. And, of course, she writes these movies, too, and stars in them.
Yeah, and I want to ask you, sorry to cut you off there, Sam, thing in particular about Elaine May. You spend a fair bit of time in your book talking about Elaine May making this film with Peter Falk and John Cassavetes, Mikey and Nikki, is that what it's called?
Yes,
and then
yes.
She shot it's incredible how she shot so much footage and she like spent, I'll let you talk about it, but she spent hours editing it. My question is, I'm curious, was this because, you know, the way her mind worked and because she had the freedom now to consider all possibilities? Talk a bit about that.
You got it. Well, look, it took a Hollywood that would allow for an improviser to improvise. You know, today that would be unthinkable. It was almost unthinkable even then. I mean, Elaine pushed the studio to the limit. But yes, she working like an improviser, thinking like an improviser, casting two improvisers, John Cassavetes and Peter Falk, virtually improvised her way through this movie, Mikey and Nikki. It's an incredibly intense, funny, surprising movie about a subject we don't really see on screen too often, which is adult male friendship.
Mm.
And Elaine went for it, as she always did. And I think you can see the same high quality in her film Ishtar, which has become a punchline, unfortunately. Though the first half of Ishtar between Dustin Hoffman and Warren Beatty, when they are improvising songs together, is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. So I might have the timelines wrong, but it doesn't matter. This is improv. It's yes and. We're free-flowing. We're free-form
right.
Here. I want to ask you, we can't really talk about improv without talking about Del Close, can we? Tell me about
no,
him.
No, we can't.
No, tell
we
me
can't.
About Del Close.
Well, Del Close, who was a teacher at Second. He was in the Compass, a version of the Compass, which was the first improvisational theater in America, maybe ever in the world, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Del was in the Compass with Mike and Elaine, and he was then moved on to Second City, and he was part of the Committee, which was a great improvisational theater in San Francisco, and then finally sort of the patron saint of the Upright Citizens Brigade. So Del Close is the Zelig of improvisation and was a teacher and figure of risk. You know, he represents, he had many lessons, but I think Del's great lesson to the world is take the crazy choice, make the crazy choice, because it's only on the other side of crazy that you're going to find new worlds emotionally and artistically. And in a way, he learned that from Elaine. He was in love with Elaine his whole life, and who can blame him? But Elaine used to say, the only safe thing is to take a risk.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great quote, and I wish that's something I could take as my mantra more than I actually do.
I think we all should.
I think you're doing it.
Well, I'm trying to. I'm trying to.
You're succeeding.
But I'm glad to hear you say that. I wish we saw more risk taking, you know, in popular culture. It's
Absolutely.
Just become so expensive
yeah.
that it's hard to take a risk. And that's one of the reasons I am so excited to go to improv theaters, because there are risks still being taken at your local improv theater. Every night they're taking a risk.
I wanted to get back to Del Close for 1 second before
yeah.
we move on to some other things. The thing about Del Close, you talked about, he was creatively restless, and he, one of his big innovations, like, he kind of got bored with regular improv, short form improv, and then he invented something called the Herald. Can you talk a bit about the Herald?
Yeah, he was one of the inventors of the Herald. The Herald was a sort of a group group creation by folks in and around the committee in the mid-60s in San Francisco.
No, art is possible by committee, and at the committee as well. A whole bunch of people can go out and improvise stuff that looks like theater. Basically, all you need is some traffic patterns and some game rules and some kind of image of what it is that you're going to do. And it turned out to be Harold.
Del wanted to take improv out of the realm of short form, which is to say sketch size scenes, you know, the sort of length that you see on Saturday Night Live. And he wanted to make it more theatrical. Can we take this thing and expand it into an evening's entertainment? Can we find a form to help us improvise for an hour? And the Herald was the name they gave this structure, this improvisational structure.
Yeah. Let's fast forward to the 80s, because I want to talk about, I was delighted to see that you talked about at fair length and gave me some insight that I didn't have before into SCTV, one of the greatest, if not the greatest sketch comedy series of all time.
Yeah. Do I hear some Canada in your
yes,
voice?
Yes, you do. That's
okay,
another reason.
Okay.
My fellow Canadians, with the exception of Harold Ramis, but, you know,
yep.
they were my fellow Canadians. Talk about, and very good, talk about improv in terms of SCTV.
Well, yeah, I mean, SCTV, this book started for me with SCTV in a way, because even before I started improvising, it just so happens that my best friend is the son of Andrea Martin and a fellow named Bob Dolman.
Yes.
Andrea was a star of SCTV and Bob was a writer of SCTV. So I grew up watching this work and was obsessed with it. It is the greatest comedy show of all time, and I go into reasons why in the book.
What is so great about it?
Well, aside from the obvious, what puts it over the top for me is that there's actual filmmaking,
mm-hmm.
that there's satire in the camera work, the lighting, the cutting. This, because SCTV is about media satire and show business satire, that extended into the visual presentation of these sketches. So these sketches were in effect like little movies.
Yes.
And the cultural level of reference on SCTV is also so high. I mean, unbeatably high.
Oh, yeah.
Just think about one of the greatest moments in comedy, Johnny LaRue's Christmas special. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I
when
do.
When Johnny wants his crane shot and he breaks down. I mean, this is real acting, ladies
yes.
and gentlemen.
Now tell me honestly, do you think that the Oliviers of this world, the Andy Devines of this world, do you think they had to beg for a crane shot? I think. Therefore, I am not. Can you imagine Wild Bill Hickok and Jingles begging for a crane shot? Well, I had to beg for every crane shot I ever got.
This is real acting. You know, you could see that momentarily in Farley on Saturday Night Live, or Gilda, or Belushi on Saturday Night Live, or Jan Hooks, the great Jan Hooks on Saturday Night Live. These people were really actors, but you got so much of that on SCTV, and that really conveys what we're talking about, this loserdom
yeah.
that's merely just implied, you know, in other forms of comedy.
Yeah, and I guess that's why I relate to it so much, because I feel like I sort of self-identify as a loser and a schmuck, so I can relate to those characters.
Well, we all do. We
yeah,
all should.
Yeah, yeah.
We all should, you know. we're all going to lose in the end.
That's right. Very well said. I wanted to ask you, I want to talk about Bill Murray, because Bill Murray to me seems like, he seems like the spokesmodel of Menefergissimo. Are you familiar with that word?
No.
It's a word that comes from Nick Tosh's biography of Dean Martin, Dino Living High in the Dirty Business of Dreams. And he said that Tosh's in that book made the case that Dean Martin was successful because he had this Menefergissimo in terms of the way he did his TV show and just the way he lived his life. Menefergissimo being an Italian word meaning I don't give an F. And it seems to me that Bill Murray has made a career out of that as well. What do you think?
Yes. Simply and resoundingly, yes. And you know, not giving an F is another way of saying the only safe thing is to take a risk.
Yes.
And it's another way of saying be yourself. And it's another way of saying tell the truth. These are all versions of the same thing. And Bill Murray has that.
Mm-hmm.
He can relax. You know, when you see Bill Murray, you're seeing someone who is relaxed. And that's one of the skills that you learn in improvisation. And it's one of the ways that you learn not to give an F is to relax.
Oh, what's going on here? Come on.
Where you been? I've been gone for 6 months.
Well, after school, there was a party. And then everybody went to Denver.
Yeah, we're almost out of time, Sam, but one final question, the obvious question, what is the future of improv? How do you see it evolving?
Oh, man. I mean, I see the future of improv as more people doing it,
mm-hmm.
and it becoming more a therapy, mm-hmm. actually. Something that teaches us how to be together. I think the future of improv is not in the theater, actually.
Mm. In real life?
It's in real life. Mm-hmm. It's applying the lessons that we learn on stage to our real life.
Sam Wasson, thank you very much. Yes, and.
Thank you.
Hashtag
thank
yes,
you.
And.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sam Wasson is the author of Improv Nation, How We Made a Great American Art Form. Find out more about Sam and improv at wpr.org/beta. That wraps up this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, John Moe, Donna Gaines, and Sam Wasson. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, subscribe to the Beta Podcast via Apple Podcasts or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And make sure to let us know what you think by leaving a rating or a comment. You can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at @WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
I'd just like to say that I apologize to everyone who ever met me or knew me or wanted to meet me.
Our executive producer, nay showrunner, is Adam Friedrich.
You calling me a drunk? I got you this job.
And thanks to you, our alphas. We'll see you next week. Take care and stay safe. I'm Doug Gordon.
Well, some people call him Mr. Relaxation. I thought tonight's show was a little up-tempo, but he's still my favorite entertainer.